We begin the hour with Alex Sims, Associate Professor in the Department of Commercial Law at the University of Auckland Business School and an expert on blockchain technology, copyright law and consumer law. And it's the latter that we're looking into today. Alex, hi.
Hi, Catherine. Actually, it's now Professor.
So. Oh, goodness. Congratulations. Let's take that out and I will trust that we will get that right in the future. Congratulations. That's excellent to hear.
Now, actually, so you go.
No, you go.
I was about to say, my expertise is also with copyright and IP, and the right to repair involves both of those, so it's not just consumer law, which makes it really interesting.
All right, excellent. Well, let's talk about it, because I think of it as being frustrated about having to buy a new vacuum cleaner because something stopped spinning in the head, and I can't find anyone or any tool that will allow me to fix it. This goes way further than the analogue world, shall we say. How are you coming at this with respect to the embedding of more and more software in just about everything?
Yes, well, I have looked into the analogue world, but also now I'm increasingly focusing on the software because, increasingly software is being embedded in goods. I mean, think of a modern car now. It's almost like a software on wheels. And Tesla and other ones as well, but not even all electric ones. So even just this, the standard petrol as well. You've got things like printers. And what the software does, it enables, in certain situations, manufacturers to actually control the object. So a classic example is a printer. So increasingly printers are being sold, and they're being sold, and you buy it, but you also have to buy a subscription. And so the subscription gives you your ink. And say, for example, you've got enough ink, you don't need any more. Well, you can't cancel it, because if you do cancel it, you can't use the printer at all.
So this is the equivalent of the planned obsolescence we have talked about with old-fashioned whiteware and other things, is it?
I would call it planned obsolescence on steroids.
Okay. How far can this go? Because we know our cars are now full of the software as well, and other bits of kit that are getting very, very expensive.
It's getting into not everything, but a lot of stuff. So we bought a new dishwasher recently, and we had the option if we wanted to, link up, make it internet enabled, but we didn't do that. So, you've got your washing, also washing machines, you've got fridges, all sorts of things.
What can or should be done about it?
Well, that's a very good question. Just another quick thing, and this is hopefully might outrage some people, is that you've got your washing machine or your car, etc., and it's got the software in it, and if it does develop a fault, if you want to get yourself, if you've got the skills, or an independent repairer to try to fix it, they need to go in, and quite often they need to get past a password, okay? Because it stops them from accessing the relevant bit of software. Now, under New Zealand copyright law, if an independent repairer does that, they face up to 5 years in prison and or a fine up to $150,000.
This is the equivalent of my frustration with my vacuum cleaner head the other week when I could not find a screwdriver to go in there and pull out the hair that had stopped it spinning. And the reason I couldn't find the screwdriver is that the people who make it don't want you to be able to get in there and repair. Again, it's on steroids. In this instance, if you go in there, you face fines. Is that because of the damage you might do? Is there a justification for it?
Well, they argue things like that. But it's been in the law for a long time, and no one's really realised sort of the ramifications of it. Or people have been arguing against it. So, for example, in the United States, there are specific exemptions for people to circumvent these what we call technological protection measures. But they're temporary, and they've got to be renewed. In Canada, they have trying to pass a bill that would remove this copyright infringement if you did that. But the thing that sort of really annoys me, and I've been concerned, for a long, long time about this, is that you're not doing anything to compete with the manufacturer. You're not trying to do a competing product. All you're trying to do is to get in to fix the fault.
Well, they will argue that you'll make a mess of it, I suppose, but if that's the case, then any warranty's out the window, right? And it's on you.
Well, they try to do that as well, and in some jurisdictions, they're also saying you can't. Um, you, you can't void a warranty because of that as well to protect people.
Okay. Can we talk about the Tesla car example? Because the one that you sent me is the guy who just wanted to put a trailer on the car. And, I mean, this is crazy. I mean, when you're driving a Toyota RAV4, you don't have to have a Toyota RAV4 trailer, right? If you want to go down to the local garage and hire a trailer, that's what you do. Again, let's come into the software now in these modern cars. You need to set it to trailer mode. And his Tesla wouldn't allow him to do it because the tow hitch on his car is not an official Tesla accessory. It gets worse. I think that Tesla's tow hitch and trailer package had sold out, right?
Yes.
And so now this car, God knows how much the Model Y cost, can't tow anything. This is just getting crazy, Alex.
I know. I love that example and I've used it a lot because it just shows the absurdity of the situation. So it's something you own, you paid good money for it, and you can't use it for a purpose that you'd assume you could, you know, tow something.
There's another matter that I raised earlier, actually, to do with phones, just before we came on air, and that's where they refuse to do software upgrade on a phone that might not be very old. This is another matter. Who gets to determine and why whether your perfectly good piece of hardware is entitled to a software upgrade to allow you to keep using it?
Yeah, well, I agree totally. But, I mean, at the moment, the manufacturers are not doing anything illegal at all. They're perfectly within their rights to do that, to refuse to provide, you know, software updates for equipment. And so that would be any new right to repair law should have that included within it.
What are the relevant laws in play? You talked about it earlier. There's IP, there's consumer, and there's copyright. If this weren't being misused, one suspects, in the service of planned obsolescence, what are the relevance of those three strands of law to the situation?
Okay, well, with IP, IP is not a law as such. You've got different laws, and so copyright is one of them. So copyright, you've got your thing with, as I explained, the technological protection measures, where it's an offence, you know, to bypass any security to go and fix it. You've also got the issue of spare parts, because spare parts in New Zealand are protected by copyright law, and if there's none in New Zealand, you can't do anything about it. So that's a key one. You've also got trademarks, because increasingly manufacturers are putting their logo onto spare parts so deliberately to use that as well. There's a bit of patent law, a bit of design law. So that's sort of the key bit. You also need to make changes to things like trade secrets law as well. That's under the Crimes Act. You also need to go and, well, it's not legislation, but there's an equitable action for breach of confidence. There would have to be a statutory law that would override parts of breach of confidence. So it's a massive thing. I mean, I published, or co-published an article last year, and it was in a very good academic journal, and it was much longer than most journal articles are allowed. But because the issues are so complex and so wide, it had to be that length. So that's just sort of explaining some of the complexity. And also what's really interesting is there's quite a few people, academics and others, working in this area, but they tend to come from either the consumer law angle or they come from the IP angle, because it involves both. But we've come from both of those, putting them together, which is quite interesting.
Can we talk about where there's more software than is needed, by the way? You've got a toaster story about this, have you?
Yes. So there's a really, really good short story. It's called Unauthorised Bread. It's what we call near science fiction. So it's the current technology just applied a little bit in the future. So it's made up, but the technology is here now. So anyway, just cut a long story short. You have these people who have toasters, and you can only use the toaster if you have the what we call authorized bread. So you've actually got the bread from, you know, authorized by the manufacturer. And then in the story, one day she goes to use it and there's a not working. It's because the manufacturer's gone into liquidation and so cannot use it. And also, part of, if people read it, it's online, hopefully it'll be in the sort of notes for this interview, it goes really dystopian, because then they're living in an apartment block, and some of them go around and jailbreak the toasters so they can actually be used, and they can be used for much cheaper bread. And then they have the police breaking down the doors and putting people in prison because, again, they're breaching copyright law.
Like all science fiction, it comes true eventually, right, Alex?
Yes.
The other point that you'd make, it that this is misnamed as Right to Repair. And again, I'm thinking analogue because, I mean, I'm like you. I had a fantastic dishwasher that was still going after 25 years and I snapped a knob, and listeners helped me desperately find a replacement knob. I just get frustrated with the waste and the sustainability side of this, as well as the cost side of this. But it's not just right to repair something that's broken. This is right to maintain. And I think we did a story ourselves, actually, on the tractors in the United States and the pushback that was coming from people there, where they had to use an accredited kind of maintenance agent, right?
Oh, yes. And what was happening was particularly egregious there, was because they would be using this big equipment. You know, when you're harvesting, you have to harvest then, whereas the technician might take a week to get to them, so that all their harvest is gone.
Goodness me. And that, again, is about maintenance, not just repair. And sometimes it's even right to use, which perhaps leads us back to our Tesla guy who wants to tow on his Tesla, with his Tesla.
Exactly, yeah. So that's why I always get nervous when people just talk about right to repair, because it's arguably, it's the right to even just use the things that we have bought. They're ours.
That software being used to provide software locks, digital locks, do you need some kind of justification, or again, is this a gap between the various laws?
No, that's part of what the software lock is, another word for a technological protection measure. So it's perfectly valid, perfectly legal, and people have been doing it for a long, long time.
What's happening in other countries?
Yes, good question. Most other countries are actually doing something. So they're actually passing small bits of right to repair legislation. So it might, for example, cover just some goods like whiteware and things. And like in the UK, you've got to be able to disassemble them using commonly available tools. So in your case, Catherine, that would help you then, with the
vacuum cleaner head, yeah, not
exactly.
Spinning.
So...
All I needed was a little mini tiny hexagonal or something, or star shaped screwdriver to get in there, which is made as impossible as it could be, and I could take the hair out. Do you know what, Alex? It went back to the manufacturer and they completely replaced the vacuum head. It's a year old. It's ridiculous. Carry on.
Sorry, that just goes to show that the amount of waste that's occurring, because we can't just replace a little bit. But on the good news, just I think this week in New Zealand Parliament, there is the Consumer Guarantees Right to Repair Amendment Bill by the Greens. So that got pulled out of the biscuit tin. So that's very exciting. And if it goes through, which fingers crossed it would help a little bit. So it would do some of it, but it wouldn't be a Right to Repair Act as such. And also the other problem with just focusing on the Consumer Guarantees Act is that it protects consumers. And so occasionally businesses are also protected. But if you've got your farmer with your big tractor, they certainly wouldn't be protected at all. So it's not just a consumer issue. It's also for all businesses as well.
There's jurisdictional issues here now as well, of course. If you're buying your Tesla, whose law is in play when it comes to your right to be able to do things to it?
If you're buying it in New Zealand, so make sure you buy it from a New Zealand business, and I don't know if you can buy it online, but buy it from a New Zealand business. But the problem is, and I've seen this in other settings, for example with Apple, is that the big companies overseas won't abide by New Zealand law, and so often it's the supplier in New Zealand is the one who gets squeezed. So quick example, I know in the past with iPhones, for example, and this was when it was 2 degrees, so 2 degrees is no longer, I don't think. When people were coming back to 2 degrees with a broken iPhone, under New Zealand consumer law, if it was a serious fault, they were entitled to a new phone. But the trouble was Apple wasn't supplying them with new phones, so that meant that 2 degrees had to supply the new phones, and they were severely out of pocket.
And that's for a broken phone. As I said, if you can't get it's not so much a software upgrade, it's the operating system upgrade that they just they get to a point where they say, no, we're not doing this on this phone anymore. It has to be a more recent phone. And then you're left pretty stuffed eventually because you're not getting your security patches and other important software updates. I mentioned overseas. Is there anywhere where some kind of serious law or regulation is either under consideration or is happening?
In Europe. So Europe tends to be a bit ahead of us in many ways. And so, for example, France has quite a lot of legislation. So does UK. It doesn't really go so much into the software issue. But what's quite good and what Consumer New Zealand is advocating is that in France has a really good system of a label. So when you go in, you're going to buy your new dishwasher or washing machine, you see visibly a label on the machine that gives you, you know, tells you information about how easy it is to repair, does it have spare parts, and that information there, which is something like that, giving people visibility is a really good thing. So then people will buy something that can be repaired over something that can't be repaired.
Honestly, the waste, and particularly the e-waste, you just can't buy something now that doesn't seem to have software. And I'll tell you another anecdote. I had a car breakdown only once in the entire time that I owned it, and I had to tow it back from a holiday about an hour and a half up the road. Thanks to the towie for that. And I went back to pick the car up from the mechanic, and he said, look, it was a computer thing that failed, but you don't need it anyway, so I've just rooted around it. It was the only piece of computer bit in the car, and it was the only bit that failed. But these days, you know, your everything, your washing machine, your fridge, your everything is full of this software. And here we are. Here we are with a 25-year-old Simpson, and the only thing that failed was snapping the knob. It's going to be a different story going forward. And the waste, Alex, to your point.
Well, and also in New Zealand, the estimates are only of e-waste, only 2% is actually recycled.
Go and fight the good fight, as you always do. Thank you very much, Professor Alex Sims, in the Department of Commercial Law and University at the University of Auckland Business School, and very kindly our correspondent today.